हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गराधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so now that the Pandavas have decided who's going to do what in Virat's kingdom, they've discussed all this. So now then, you know, to execute the plan. The Pandavas had discussed their plans for the final year in a secluded place. They did not want to risk disclosing their whereabouts even to their friends and servants. Right? Because even if that, if someone says something or mentions something that they know, then people will try to get the information. And even though Dharmaraj said they won't get that, it doesn't mean that they're not going to, you know, how you say, come and create trouble and all. So they just discussed that alone. It was just the six of them, the five Pandavas and Draupadi. And so then now that they've made this, now they'll go back. When they decided upon their disguises, they went back to the hermitage. Yudhishthira then said to Domya, O learned Brahman, if it is agreeable to you, please go to Drupad's city. There you may live in peace and preserve our Agnihotra fire. So the fire that they were doing, they take with them, that they're doing every day, then Domya will take with him and then perform that yajna in Draupad's kingdom. Because Draupad will always naturally take care because he's the guru for them and then, you know, Draupadi's father. Yudhishthira ordered his servants, headed by Indrasena, to go to Dwarka and live with the Yadavas. Upon arriving there, you should tell everyone that you were left alone by the Pandavas at Dvaitavan. You have no idea of their whereabouts or intentions. Right? So then, you know, that's the whole point, is that in that it's just they all left, they were left by them, and you don't know. Domya made all arrangements for the Pandavas' journey. He lit the sacred fire and offered oblations on their behalf, invoking auspiciousness upon them and blessing them that they would achieve victory. The brothers and Draupadi then walked around the sacred fire and, after bowing before the Brahmins, left the hermitage. Lean and bearded after their long stay in the forest, the five brothers, clad in deerskins and carrying their weapons, seemed like five powerful rishis as they made their way on foot towards the river Kalindi. As they passed through various countries, staying sometimes in the wild and at other times in inhabited regions, they presented themselves as hunters. Right, because, you know, they're bearded and everything, and so they live in the forest, people will think that they're hunters. Because before they presented themselves as Brahmins, and everybody would have known that, but now they're presenting themselves as hunters. Bhima carried Draupadi, and they moved quickly towards their destination. After many days of travel, they finally arrived at the Matsya's expansive country. They saw the well-laid roads and paths that led from the forest into the capital. Right, because the capital has to have all these nice roads, especially for the army to move. So the big roads and that like that. And then for others, there'll be other roads outside for the villages and everything. When the Pandavas reached the outskirts of the city, Yudhishthira sat them all down in a grassy clearing and said, O best of men, although you are all acquainted with the science of diplomacy and policy, it still behooves me to advise you, right? Because he's the elder brother. We should conduct ourselves carefully in Virata's presence. Kings are always to be feared as one fears a deadly snake. The protectors and cherishers of all beings. They are deities in human form and are like great fires equipped with all weapons. One should always act with the utmost caution in the king's presence. He who acts falsely with the king is killed by him. Of this there is no doubt, right? Because the kings are very powerful. They know the shastras and that, but you do something wrong, then you get punished. So they said, be very careful of them. So you shouldn't just think, you know, deal badly and everything. Yudhishthira spoke for some time, giving detailed instructions about all aspects of behavior with kings. He did not want his brothers to make any mistakes now that they were so close to completing their vow. Right? So if their servants, that they should know how to deal like that. They were Yudhishthira's servants, they should know what is the etiquette of the servants. So they're perfectly dealing and all that. They've always dealt with service, so they know how they're always doing. They just have to follow. But now Yudhishthira gives the details to make it clear. He did not want his brothers to make any mistakes now that they were so close to completing their vow. Just one more year and they would be able to reclaim their kingdom. After finishing his instructions, Yudhishthira led them towards the city. As they walked on, he said to Arjuna, "If we enter Virata with our weapons, we will frighten the citizens and be conspicuous. Indeed, your Gandiva is famous throughout the world. If we are discovered by anyone, then we will have to live a further 13 years in exile." Yudhishthira had faith in Dharma's boon, but he did not want to take unnecessary chances. The Pandavas decided to conceal the weapons near the city. After looking around, they came upon a huge sami tree near a cremation ground. The area was dismal and deserted, far from the road and close to the forest. Arjuna suggested they wrap their weapons into a cloth bundle and place them high in the tree. Anyone seeing that bundle by the crematorium would assume it to be a corpse and leave it alone. Agreeing to the suggestion, the brothers unstrung their bows and placed them upon Bhima's large deerskin garment, because his was the biggest, right? They wrapped and tied the bows, swords, quivers, and arrows. Nakula ascended a tree with the bundle and secured it to a high branch, which he felt offered sufficient shelter from the rain. So it'll be there, it'll be sheltered from the rain. You can't really see it too clearly, but it's hanging there, so people just think it's a corpse. Because there's all kinds of weird things like this. You have these vatals and this and that, and they hang out as corpses in trees and do stuff like that, and at night they come out. So you don't bother them. No one's going to go near that. Because it's a cremation ground, it's a big tree, no one's going to climb it. The Pandavas then made their way towards the city. They passed some cowherd men and told them they had just placed their mother's body on the tree. "This is our ancient custom," Yudhishthira said. "We have placed our old mother's body high in the tree. May she attain to the blessed heavenly regions." Right? Because this is, like that. Because the higher up you are, the closer you are to heaven, like that. So they may have seen like that. So then they tell them that, and then, okay, we don't bother these guys. These are weirdos, As they reach the city, and they'll tell a few people that it's a body hanging there, so then no one will go near it. As they reach the city gate, Yudhishthira prayed to Goddess Durga, seeing her as Krishna's divine energy, whose service is to conceal the Lord's identity from the atheists. He asked for her protection, right? Because she covers, that's the thing, she covers and then places one in the position to according to your karma and stuff. So in this way, she by her covering potency, then he's playing that she may cover the others so they don't understand. Just as they don't understand the Lord, they won't understand them, his devotees. Pleased by his prayer, the goddess appeared before the Pandavas. "O heroes, you will soon attain victory in battle. After slaying your enemies, you will again enjoy the earth. Through my grace, neither the Kurus nor the inhabitants of Virata will recognize you until the final year has expired." Right? So Dharmaraj said, you're not going to be, he gave the boon, you won't be seen. But then how has that come to pass? Because Durga herself is personally protecting. The goddess disappeared, right? So what elevated personalities that they offer their prayers and they're just so proper and everything like that, that she comes personally to see them, right? The goddess disappeared and the Pandavas entered the capital, Virat. Yudhishthira went first, but before parting from his brothers, he gave each of them a secret name by which they could call each other if the need arose. He was called Jaya, and the others were Jayanta, Vijaya, Jayatsena, and Jayatbala. Yudhishthira then strode into the city like a mighty lion. He went directly to the king's court. The king saw him enter like the moon emerging from the clouds. Turning to his counselors, he asked, "Who is this man who walks into my court as if he were a king?" Right? Because others will walk in and come up and be like that, and the guards and like that, and "I'd like to see the king," and like this, and "Oh yeah, I like this," and standing like so. He just walks in. He knows the way in, he knows the path, because Vastu means always they're set out in a certain way. And so he knows how to come. And even he comes and he says, "I want to see the king." How he walks in is very comfortable. Like we saw before with Drupad, because he didn't know who they were because they came dressed as Brahmins for the Swayamvar. So then he set up this room you know, that you could had places around that you could see. And in it, he placed five of these most opulent seats, you know, thrones for kings. And they came and sat down on them comfortably like they're just normal furniture. Well, anybody else would have kind of like, wow, you know, nowhere else a place to sit. You know, should I sit there? They might even sit on the footstool and, you know, or just stand. They just sat comfortably, laid back, laughing, joking. So they think, okay, these must be royal, these guys. Who is this man who walks into my court as if he were a king? He cannot be a Brahmin. I think he is a lord of the earth, although he is neither a slave nor any attendant, he has neither a slave nor any other attendants with him. He shines like Indra and approaches me as fearlessly as an elephant might approach a lotus. Like, you know, it's not like he's coming in and a lion. No, it's a lotus, you know. Yudhishthira came up to Virat and said, O sinless one, know me to be a Brahmin who has lost everything and now seeks your service. I wish to live with you and accept you as my master. Joyful at having acquired such an obviously qualified man, Virat replied, O worshipable one, I bow down to you. So that's the thing. He comes as a Brahmin, so he's an assistant to the king. But he's an assistant to the king, but the etiquette, he's a Brahmin, so he'll be respected. That was Arjuna's anxiety, right? So that's taken care of here, we see. So even though he'll be with them and a personal assistant and associate, but he's a Brahmin who's doing this, so he'll always get that proper respect. O worshipable one, I bow down to you. You are most welcome. I will give you the post you desire. Which country are you from and what is your name? Do you possess any particular skills? I was formerly a friend of Yudhishthira and my name is Kanka. I am expert in casting dice and can entertain and please you in that way. The king smiled without thinking for a moment that the so-called Brahmin before him might actually be Yudhishthira himself. Although he felt the newcomer to be extraordinary, he accepted his explanation. He felt an immediate affinity for Kanka, whose expressions and bodily movements were gentle and pleasing. If he was Yudhishthira's friend, then he was surely of the highest character and worthy of his respect, because Yudhishthira being the topmost, he was a friend of Yudhishthira that would serve in his court and all that, then he must be of such high character. Live with me in peace, Virat said cheerfully. This kingdom is as much yours as it is mine. I am always pleased by expert dicers. Yudhishthira asked that he not be called to play with low-class people or involved in disputes or fights over the game. Right? In this case, he's not going to be involved. The king replied, I will kill anyone who does you any wrong. If the wrongdoer is a Brahmin, I will banish him from the kingdom. Let all my subjects hear my proclamation. This Kanka is as much the lord of this domain as myself. Right? Just by his character and qualities, he can see his position. He doesn't even know him. But it's just so obvious on how they behave. Turning to Yudhishthira, the king continued, You shall be my friend. You shall ride on my chariot, wear the best clothes, and enjoy the finest dishes. My door will always be open to you, and you will always become my closest advisor and counselor. Right. So then he'll ask him on points of state and everything, what to do and everything like that. And so it will go very nicely. So that was the anxiety of Arjuna. So how will he be able to do? Because the others, they can do it. Arjuna is going to be, you know, fun to, you know, play this part, you know, because he's such a man. He's the man's man, you know, like that. But then he's playing this. Bhima, he's the cook. He does all these things. The other two, then they are very expert with horses and cows and like this. And so they'll all be fine. And Draupadi, then she'll have, you know, that you have to watch out for. She might have a little difficulty, but she knows what to do. She'll be able to do. But Yudhishthira is what they were worried about. And so you see his position is very good. Yudhishthira was then shown to his quarters in the king's palace, and he began to live there happily and undetected by anyone. The following day, Bhima entered the city. He went down the main road towards the king's palace, appearing like a powerful lord of elephants. In his hands he held a ladle and a cooking spoon, as well as a shining, unblemished sword, azure in color, like the blue. So that means that's that what they call nowadays the Damascus steel. So the highest grade swords, they were blue, like that Sahadev, you know, his sword was blue. He was very expert at that. Dressed as a cook, he went before the king, illuminating the royal court with his bodily effulgence. Virat looked at him in amazement and asked his counselors, "Who is this young man, exceedingly handsome, with the shoulders of a lion? Although he is new here, I feel as if I have always known him. I cannot place him, but he surely must either be Indra himself or perhaps the powerful Gandharva king. Whatever he wants, let him have it immediately." One of Virat's counselors went to Bhima and asked him what he desired. The Pandava looked up at the king and said, "O king, I am a cook named Vallabha. Pray appoint me to your kitchen, for I am expert in the culinary arts." Virat gazed at Bhima's massive arms and broad chest. "I cannot believe that you are a cook. You shine like the thousand-eyed king of the gods, and from your grace, beauty, and prowess, you appear to be the best of men." "O king, I am your servant. Allow me to work in the royal kitchens." As he addressed the king, Bhima's voice resounded in the royal court like a great drum. "In days gone by, my cooking was tasted by Yudhishthir, but I possess other abilities as well. I am a peerless wrestler and can entertain you by fighting lions and elephants." He's going to wrestle with them himself, right? As with Kanka, the king felt an immediate affection for this unusual arrival. "You should become the head of my kitchens, but I do not think this office worthy of you. You should rather be the ruler of the earth." Right? Because he's a king, he has all good qualities in that, but he can just see that these persons have so much greater prowess. Bhima began to work in the kitchens, right? She said he'll make him in charge of the kitchens, not just he'll be a cook, you know, he'll be in charge. You know? And they cook for a lot of people. Right? Becoming a great favorite of the king and recognized by no one. How are we doing on time?
Another 3 minutes.
Okay. Draupadi was next to enter the city. With her glossy black hair twisted into one long braid down on her right-hand side, and dressed in a single soiled cloth, she walked through the city streets as if in distress. Many people gathered around her and asked her who she was and what she wanted. "I am a Sairindri," Draupadi replied. "I seek someone who will employ and maintain me." So she doesn't have the braid just down the back. It's all, you know, pulled off and down the side. The hair will be braided out this way. Because in the Vedic idea is that whatever your duties are, your position, it's very clear. Because then you deal with them based on those duties. Because the soul doesn't have any of these qualities. It's the conditioning that does. And so, therefore, you deal properly that everybody is seen on the level of the soul. But at the same time is then you have to have a medium to interact. And so the Varnashram then would give that position to interact from. And you did the duties and you did everything there. So then how she dresses, then you'll know, okay, then she's a Sairindri. Like that. She just has the braid in the back, like the other ladies, and they'll think, oh, she's a princess, she's a queen. Like you saw how it was for Yudhishthira and Bhima. So then this way is then you're going to think she's something else. Hearing her sweet voice and observing her incomparable beauty, the people found it hard to believe that she could be a maidservant. They directed her to the royal palace, and as she was walking, Sudeshna, Virat's wife, saw her, right? Because where she'll walk from the position where you can be seen from the inner palace. Right? You have the outer palace means where the court is and where everything comes and where you have the official meetings and everything. But the other part of the house is the inner part of the house. But it also has its windows and balconies and everything like that. So she will move from that side, because again, she knows the Vastu, right? Being a queen, she knows all the Vastu. So she'll move that side so that the queen would see her. The queen asked, "Oh, gentlemen, why do you wander about in this way?" Draupadi repeated her story, and Sudeshna replies, "This surely cannot be true. Oh, most beautiful one, it seems to me that you yourself could appoint numerous servants. By your bodily appearance, I take you to be one of the highest and most noble lineage. Your countenance shines like the full moon. Your body is shapely. Your eyes are like the lotus petals, framed by curling lashes. Your lips are red like the bimba fruit, and your skin is as smooth as silk. In beauty, you resemble a goddess and must surely have descended from the heavens. Pray tell me who you are, for you cannot possibly be a maidservant." Draupadi straightened her disheveled cloth and turned her dark eyes towards the queen. "I am neither a goddess nor a celestial. I am a maid of the Sairindri class. I am skilled in dressing hair and preparing unguents. I can make variegated and beautiful garlands of jasmines, lotuses, and lilies. Because the queens would know all the 64 arts. And that. And so then easily they can do all these things. You know, they have assistants. They may be doing, but they know them. They can do them themselves. That's how you get others to work. If you can do it, you can get others to do. Previously, I have served Satyabhama, Krishna's beloved queen, and Draupadi, the Pandava's wife. My name is Malini. Now I have no engagement. Please allow me to serve in your palace, O queen. Because if you go back to she was Draupadi, they're in the forest, so then no one knows where they are. So then naturally she has nothing to do. Sudeshana gazed at Draupadi's unparalleled beauty and obvious nobility. How could she be a serving maid? Still, she would make a valuable addition to the palace. But what effect would she have on the king and indeed any other man who saw her? The queen smiled at Draupadi, but spoke doubtfully. I can place you on my head, never mind as my servant. I do not doubt it, yet I fear that your beauty will captivate the king's heart, seeing how even the women here are staring at you. I feel there is no man alive who could resist your charms. It seems that even the trees are bending low to pay you homage. Surely upon seeing you, the king will lose his heart and forsake me. O lady of sweet smiles, the person upon whom you cast a glance will certainly fall victim to the god of love. By engaging you, I will bring upon myself my own destruction. Although I should love to have your company, this is my fear. Covering her long hair with her upper cloth, Draupadi reassured the queen, neither Virat nor any other man can win me, fair lady, for I have 5 Gandharva husbands. Those invincible heroes always protect me, and I will not cast a single glance on another man. However, they stipulate certain conditions for those who would engage me. My husbands desire that I not eat any food that has already been taken by another, and that I not be asked to wash another's feet. Guarding me secretly, my husbands bring about the immediate destruction of any man who desires me. No one is able to sway me from the path of righteousness, O queen. Indeed, I ask that you always keep me safe, safe from others' men, from other men. Therefore, allay your fears. Sudeshana decided to employ Draupadi. She promised that her food would always be fresh and untouched by another, and that she would not be called upon to wash anyone's feet. Draupadi thanked her and was led by the queen into the inner chambers of the palace, where she began her life as a maid servant. So then we'll end here, and then we'll see how the other brothers then come into the kingdom. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada.